IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 36 of the Killing It Podcast. So, Ryan, you may or may not know this. Well, you don't, because Dave and I just recorded a podcast that will be broadcast tomorrow, where it was just the two of us, but I said, oh, Dave's also on the Killing It
podcast. And I did it.
So I'm nice. I'm on a 90% vacation. So I'm spending 1 hour a day doing fun stuff like this, and then the rest of the time I'm actually drinking. So
proper life prioritization. as we are all deep into an American holiday week here. We are flung around the world into the many corners, but still producing the podcast as we go, because it's not work, it's fun.
It's right. This is, well, the exactly. You're getting all of us geared up for vacation in chilling moods.
and then by the time you hear this, we will all be back at our table with you, trying to lose the same weight that you are losing from Thanksgiving. So.
Right. So future us will feel the pain.
Yeah, exactly. We are in this together.
So, a couple of notes. First of all, we were just before we started the recording talking about the mailbag, and the mailbag is exploding. So please, please continue to do what you're doing. Send us your requests, send us your topics. You can email all of us. We're all on LinkedIn. We're not hard to find.
Yeah, we're not
put at our all. Links in the show notes. And as always, you know, contact us by any means necessary, and let us know what you want to talk about.
We are your private analysts. You get to throw topics at us, and you get three opinions for just the price of an email.
And last week, the topic was all about ethics in every way you can look at it. Today, I think the overarching message is the world is really, really complicated, and you can't just say, Google bad, Amazon good, right? Those days are gone. Everything we talk about today is falls under the category of, well, I want this to be really simple, but it's not.
I actually likened, on the business of tech this week, I was talking about a couple of these, and I likened it, some of these companies, to having midlife crises, that they're actually in that midlife time from a development perspective, and they're really struggling with how to be multiple sides, multifaceted.
Right. Yeah, well, I was reading a book recently that was talking about the stages of business development, and they likened it to a human life cycle. You know, there's infant stage, there's toddler stage, and what they were observing was that many of the big tech companies that, you know, we use them and we love them as consumers, we question their motives as business people and market analysts, they were referring to them as going through, not their midlife crisis, but through their teenage years. And I was like, I get that. I understand that that's an accurate characterization. So if we've ever known or lived with a surly teenager, apply that logic to the Google folks, and you'll understand how to deal with it.
Part of what we are tempted to do is to say, look, the money is so big, right? That you know, Elon Musk can build rockets that land on platforms in the ocean, and nobody else has ever had that much money before.
And really, really ugly trucks.
Cybertruck.
We're not talking about today. But when you think about, like, go back to the oil days, like Carnegie had in his day that much money. He could buy the entire shipping industry and dismantle it so that he could move things by train, right? So the amounts of money are all relative, but it's not the case that the throes of growing up as a massive business today are really that much different than they were with Carnegie or Ford or some of the others.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that antitrust then oxygenated the marketplace in exactly those environments. So I've been talking a lot about government regulation over on Business of Tech, and you know, I look at it actually as this could be very positive. Government regulation is often viewed as very negative. I am coming at that saying, let's challenge that idea, because there's lots of examples that say this is good for a marketplace.
So yeah, absolutely. A great intro to the last comment about the next topic. Boom. How about that?
Look at us.
So topic one today, these guys are getting tired of me talking about drones, but we're going to put a link to an article.
Well, they're cool.
Of course they're cool. And But there's now these wars going on, and one of them that we're going to talk about in this article is Walmart versus Amazon on the last mile, right? It, in many ways, the last mile is the most difficult part, and Amazon basically has declared, look, we're just going to give it away for free, and that makes it really, really hard for our competition to do anything. But what Walmart has said, okay, we'll challenge you, and part of how we're going to do that is we're going to integrate blockchain technology in that, and we are going to have massive amounts of patents. We're just going to take you on, you know, full front. We're going to own the patents, and you can pay us to deliver that last mile.
See, I'm of the opinion, again, I will never get tired of talking about the drone opportunity, because beyond the it's cool hobbyist factor, I think we're actually moving into the practical application stages, right? To borrow the Gartner terminology, we're beyond the peak of the hype cycle. We're through the valley of despair, and we're back into, you know what, you can actually do work with these things. And sometimes, as we've discussed before, it's going to be entirely grassroots from the very ground up, with the Navy and soldiers volunteering to figure out how to deliver to an underway submarine with a drone to eliminate that docking process. Sometimes it comes from people with tons of money. And I think right now Walmart and Amazon have such a vested interest in fixing this last mile thing that everybody, even those of us paying attention to the marketplace, we're going to be surprised at how quickly this last mile solution comes to market.
Well, and Amazon, Amazon's always assumed like, oh, they are the giant. Walmart is a huge player in this space. Oh, yeah. They have placed really, really big bets. You know, they had their $3.3 billion purchase of Jet. You know, they're operating last year on nearly $7 billion in profits. I mean, like overall, I mean, this is a machine of selling in, you know, retail, as well as a one heavily invested in e-commerce, fighting Amazon. And they don't have Amazon's cash cow of Amazon Web Services to draw on, but they've got their own, you know, elements of their retail business to draw on. So, you know, everyone immediately sort of says, oh, well, Walmart versus Amazon, that's not the same thing. They have huge investments in technology. They are a technology company.
Well, see, and to your point, though, I think just to kind of tag on that real quick, they're not a technology company so much as they are a selling things company, and they use technology for that purpose.
Sure.
In the e-commerce world, everybody was like, oh, Amazon won, it's over, it's done. Yeah, except this isn't just an e-commerce world. This is a commerce world that has physical goods. They will be electronically ordered, they will be physically delivered. And honestly, as much as Amazon is trying to own the world of inside the warehouse operations, there's nobody on the planet who moves goods among warehouses in the physical world better than Walmart does. So they are a logistics company, start and finish. I kind of put them in the lead of this horse race.
Well, and the other thing you have to remember, Walmart has a different audience, right? Walmart does not have people who go out, sleep overnight, and buy a $1,500 cell phone, right? Sure. As a rule, there's very little overlap. And so, you know, when you think about like the innovator's dilemma, like, okay, how do we find an audience where we can just slightly undercut them and steal the base from somebody else? And so they have the potential to do that. At the same time, Amazon can say, fine, we'll go high. We'll just make more money. What do we care, right? So it's an interesting battle. It's also the case that they both come from different places, but when you get to the last mile, it has to be physical, and that's where Walmart has already excelled.
Yes, very much so, and have the physical infrastructure to back that up. You know, I think you made another interesting point around patents. You know, we can have a bit of that philosophical debate around patents and what they mean. You know, I'm a free market kind of guy, and I actually look at a lot of what's going on with patents as saying it's actually against that idea of allowing competition and allowing people to do proper innovation by locking down patents at the level that it's been done. I mean, the fact that we have patent trolls even as a thing, right, is, that's not a, in my mind, that's not a real business. That's, right. That's, well, you know, that,
yeah, that,
Look at the cell phone industry. You know, there's one thing after another. Well, like, somebody finally wins a patent war, and now you got to go pay them for every phone you've made in the last 20 years.
Right, yeah, exactly. Well, like, that was not the idea.
That is kind of an unnatural manipulation of the free market in that situation. And so hopefully that's where regulations can come in. But it is, you know, again, in the world of reading that we do, many of these topics eventually come together, right? Recently, I read an article about the conversation around billionaires and how did these people actually get to this point. And the focus on Bill Gates, their observation was he made his billions the same way every other bajillionaire ever did. And it wasn't by creating and dominating the substance of a marketplace. It was by building a toll gate around a marketplace, an entire industry, such that he didn't get paid for all the software and all the computers that got sold in the world, but there was never a computer in the IBM/derivative Windows computing marketplace. For a generation, there wasn't one that got sold that he didn't get paid something for. So the rising tide might have lifted everybody's boat, but anybody's boat lifted Bill Gates's boat. And that's that's where I see the Walmart guys with an advantage in this particular situation. They will figure this out for themselves, and they will. It's not possible to imagine a world in which Walmart does not win the logistics game, and then they're not going to keep that to themselves. Every other company needs that access too. So, you know, maybe Walmart will be the next Microsoft in getting paid a licensing fee for their drone coordination technology.
I will also note an interesting use for blockchain, this idea of actually tracking delivery handoff between drones. I mean, you know, we were talking about blockchain applications just a couple of weeks ago. That's an interesting application to see that. We're starting to see these actual usages for blockchain. And by the way, they're not necessarily all crypto.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, final comment on this, at least from me, is that I love this quote from this other article we're going to put a note to. The more competition, the greater the chance of regulations in favor of commercial drone operators. And this is sort of like, if you want to win the war on this last mile, you need to be involved. Like, you need to be one of the people who is moving things about. And then you get to be in part of that conversation. And so people who are not in the conversation don't get to make the rules, don't get to regulate themselves, don't get to determine, you know, what the market looks like that they are moving into. And so if you're not part of that conversation, at least figure out, like, who can you partner with that is part of that conversation?
Well, and to build on that with my last comment on this topic, I keep saying, yes, Mr. MSP, you do need to be paying attention to drones. This is going to be one of the endpoints and network devices that you must be monitoring and managing for your customers in the near future. If you say, I only do endpoints in the classical IT sense of things, and I'm never going to manage a drone, your customers are going to be adopting these things faster than you can imagine. And if you can't manage them, so somebody's going to do it.
And I'm not going to have a last word in the favor of just to have it last word. So nice work, guys.
So I would say last word is, if you haven't checked it out, go listen in on the drone community at CompTIA. They meet every other month online, and the conversation is all about the practical side. There's no, like, you know, up in the air, oh, we could theoretically do this and that. No, it is exactly how do you do this in construction, and which drones are you using, and, you know, which laws.
It's a cool space for sure.
Yeah. So Ryan, what's next? Topic two.
So topic number two, as we're moving into some practical things, right? I like that part of the conversation, trying to figure out some of the complexities. When we talk to business owners or to salespeople in the world, we always say, listen, you live in a world of four layers of complexity. You sell complicated things to complicated customers in a complicated value channel in a complicated business model. As a result, you know, it takes a certain amount of savvy or intelligence to be able to succeed in this world. We spend a lot of time talking about the complexities at the solution level, and we've spent a lot of time talking about the complexities at our own business model level. we don't often get back to that question of the complexities in the value chain. Your vendors, your distributors, and the people that, you know, they produce things that you sell through to your end users. The big question is always, well, I don't ever get any leads out of these people. They never approve my request for deal reg or special pricing. How come somebody else get, you can hear my tone, right? I hear a million of these complaints in the industry. And yet every single day, there are channel players who get more than their fair share of all these limited and constrained resources. How do they do that? Well, I will tell you, it is not an accident. It is a fundamental thing. So the topic that I'd love to hear from you guys about here is your experience on how do you get those vendors to give you more than your fair share? How do you get into that direction of the value chain in your own best interest?
Well, so I'm gonna start by making a comment. So I've spent the past 8 years of my career and my life standing in a lot of booths. Okay, so I've been with two, I've been on the vendor side for 8 years. Obviously, I was a solution provider before that. So I stood in a lot of freaking booths. The number of times I got asked what I did and what my motivation was for talking to people, I could probably measure on one hand, maybe two, in 8 years, and I spent 100,000 miles a year flying around. The number of times people actually asked, like, well, what it is, how are you, what are you here to accomplish, is so small, it shows a massive disconnect. If you aren't understanding who it is you're talking to and why they're there, you don't necessarily get a sense of it. And this also matters for, like, you know, the people calling in, the people that you're dealing with on email. If you don't understand the motivation on the other side, it's not a great relationship. You're not building a great relationship. A lot of, you know, if you're dealing with vendors, a lot of them have dedicated people who are trying to figure out your business, understand your business, make a difference in your business, whatever that might mean. But if you don't know who those people are and you assume A, they're either all salespeople and just want to close something,
right,
or B, they're just engineers and they just want to tell you about the product, you're missing a lot of, like, talent. Like, one of the reasons I always go to something like a CompTIA, like ChannelCon, is the likelihood of getting a really senior person in the booth is actually pretty high. You know, you're going to get somebody who's there for the meetings, and there's these obligatory booth times that everybody has to do at CompTIA. So you're getting a lot of really senior people hanging out in their booth, and a lot of people are not taking advantage of that. So for me, the first part is always understand the motivation of the people that you're talking to, because that's going to help you have a much better relationship. Right.
I always ask the very simple question, like, how are you measured? Like, what are, is it, do you need new partners? Do you need total number of new signups? Do you need the number of endpoints, whatever it is? The other thing I would add to that is most people don't look for little clues to figure out when a vendor is actually telling them, I have this really hard thing that nobody wants to do. If you do this, we will engage you at a different level.
Right, exactly.
I've heard these stories where somebody takes on a difficult technology that everybody else goes, oh my God, that's such a pain in the neck. I don't even want to go down that road, right? Somebody goes down that road, becomes the number one Dynamics reseller in their city and then their county and then their state. And suddenly, vendors are throwing them 100% of their leads because here's somebody who gets it and is willing to invest the money, train their staff, right, go down that road. So look for the difficult, you know, that if it's easy, it's going to be cheap, right? Right. The easier it is, the closer it is to a commodity. The more difficult it is, the more you're going to stand out to vendors as well as clients.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, right? I learned this lesson years ago in my previous life in market analysis and doing all of the statistics about what was going on in the channel. And I always said, think as a contrarian. If you see a chart that says, what are your peers actually selling right now in the marketplace? Number one on the list, number two on the list. everybody's gut reaction is, well, that's the thing I should be selling. My answer was always, look at the bottom of the list and figure out what's not popular but could be lucrative, because that's the space, that's the blue ocean, right? That's the space where you're not going to have a lot of commodity competitors, and you're going to have an opportunity to really cut yourself out, right? Carl's point a moment ago, right? My crass oversimplification for years has been, if you tell me how somebody gets paid, I can predict how they will behave. Now, that's not only true in the vendor relationship world. That's actually the essence of sales 101. You tell me what your customer wants to accomplish, and I can tell you what would motivate them to buy the thing that you are selling. Well, that's why we've gotten to this point of, we describe it as, a solution provider lives in a world where you own the responsibility of selling in both directions. You must convince the customer to buy the thing from you instead of anybody else. And you must convince that value chain that you are the preferred route to market. There, I can't tell you how many people are bona fide geniuses on the technology. Actual implementation wizards have far and away the most advanced capabilities in the marketplace. And they live in the periphery, and they barely ever find any opportunity because they're just not playing the game properly. If you're not actively aware of who are my reps, how do they get measured, what do they want to accomplish this quarter, and what can I do for them that they're begging people to do and no one will agree, that is a fast forward button for success in the channel. Even when other people have more advanced skills, more years of experience, more capability, that's not how you win in this marketplace, right? Yesterday, who was the best techie in the room was the determining factor of who would win. Today, it's who knows how to play the channel game the best. We can argue about technology trends all day long, and we can come up with the correct answer. That doesn't mean that we're going to win the business game. And I think that's where channel companies really need to pay attention. And
I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the fact that, look, you know, we know that in a cloud world, in the world that we're dealing with now, you actually, as a solution provider, actually probably have more than three primary vendors. You're in a world where you probably have 10 that you're dealing with. What we're saying here actually is even more important. Because you need to understand the people you're dealing with and make sure you're talking to the right people about the things you need to do and establishing a relationship with the right person. Just because you have 10 vendors you work with does not mean you've worked that. And so my advice is, be better at this so that your time is really maximized, because the problem is multiples bigger in terms of managing those relationships.
Yeah, a vendor is not a vendor is not a vendor. They have different offerings. They have different go-to-market strategies. They have different compensation plans, different channel program architectures. It is the way we do this, and it's something we've actually done many, many times over in paid gigs with our solution provider customers, is portfolio management, right? Like you need to have an established set of attributes and criteria that defines not only who are these animals you are playing with, but how should you be engaging them for your maximum best interest. And if people would just get together and understand that we're in it together, and the vendor doesn't win without the partner doesn't win without the vendor, if we all admitted that and learned how to work more effectively together. Yes, it's complicated. I get that the matrix of many vendors, many distributors, all of that, you know, is, screw it. Let's just default to, I work with one vendor, dang it. And that's the only thing I ever do. That's the easiest way, but the easiest never was the most profitable path.
And this is a theme we're going to come back to time and time again. But now, for a tortured segue, Ryan mentioned a bona fide genius. So let's talk about Tim Berners-Lee, a true bona fide.
An actual genius. Super genius.
Super genius.
So for those that may have missed it, Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web, came out this week with his contract for the web. It's at contractfortheweb.org. If you're interested in taking a look at it, it is an idea of setting out principles for governments, companies, and individuals on what the responsibilities are to build a better web, to make sure that we're, he even describes it as, not fall into the digital dystopia. I've covered on the Business Tech. It was on the Monday episode, so you can find it if you're interested in covering it there, or read the principles at contractfortheweb.org. What I wanted to talk about here, because I think this is such a really great area, is, look, these have been put out. The basic premise is that big companies can sign up, and or companies, governments can sign up and be listed on the website as holding up to the principles. How does your average solution provider leverage this set of ideas into something effective?
See, I think this is exactly the right question. What we are always trying to translate is, here's a humongous idea, a concept, and what it means to you at the street level. This is actually what the bona fide genius just did, right? What he said was, the internet is, it's a tremendously valuable, essential utility. It's something that we must admit is no longer optional, right? It's not, it's no longer at the nice to have level. It has achieved societal value at the level of must have, not want to have. And here's what the role of companies, countries, and customers is. The concept brings it down to the individual contributor. Yes, 9 principles applying to the overall consortium attitude of how we should be dealing: openness, continuous access, no shenanigans with control, or just turning off the internet in certain countries. All right, I agree with him philosophically at a very emotional level, but the thing I took away was, this brings it down to you and me. As a solution provider, you should not be selling anybody who's not agreed to buy into this. That conversation of ethics and access and control of privacy, all of that, what he's saying is, if we do not fundamentally put down our foot and say, it's not optional anymore, this must be the way that we deal with the internet, you either agree or you don't agree. Okay. You know what? That should be your sales pitch to your customers.
Right. And to be clear, by the way, individuals and small organizations can endorse the contract. So let's be clear on that.
And he's the right person to start this conversation, but also he fully, he acknowledges, just because of the history of the world, some of these principles, like all the internet available all the time that Ryan alluded to, I can't see China or a few other countries signing on to that, right? So they want to be part of this conversation, and they want to be able to say, well, in support of our culture, we want as much of the internet to be available as is practicable, and, blah, 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 right? But at least we're having that conversation, and I think it matters a lot. It does, as we were talking before about the AI and the ethics. I love the fact that we are starting to have these conversations at a much higher level about let's have rules that govern the entire, industry, the entire communications infrastructure of the world as we know it. Right.
Right.
It's a pretty cool conversation to have. And it's nice that you can actually go to this site and put in your 2 cents.
I mean, let me make this super practical for a lot of people. So you, the solution provider, can start with principles 4, 5, and 6 and look at your own organization and say, are we involved in these things, and what are we going to do as a company to stand up for this? And then your next step, when you do it for yourself, is to focus on both 4, 5, and 6, and then the individuals 7, 8, and 9 for citizens for your customers. You've got a blueprint of the things you can go talk to with your customers and say, these are the things that we're focusing on to make sure that we're dealing with things ethically. So, by the way, what do you mean by that? Principle 5 talks about the idea to respect and protect people's privacy and personal data to build online trust. Most companies, everyone I can generally think of, are collecting some data about their customers, about their personal information. Are you building it and managing it in such a way that does respect people's privacy and personal data? You can do that at a small level in a small organization. I think of your local dentist, your local plumber, your local lawyer, the companies that literally solution providers deal with every single day can take on these ideas and say, these are the ways that we as a company do it internally and the way we help our customers do it as well. That's a massive differentiator if you're good at this.
Again, right there, that's the key word, right? To be brazenly commercial about this, as much as we agree with this philosophically, as much as I align myself with his nine principles and go, hell yes, it's about time somebody with a big hammer said this in the real world, translate that into your local business. Why do you get certification and endorsements and put them on your business card to begin with? Well, it's a branding exercise. It's a distinguishing position in the marketplace that allows somebody to say, you know what, you could manage my servers, or you could manage my servers. What's the difference? Well, historically, there's capability, there's technology platforms, there's pricing, and now there's an entirely new distinguishing factor that you can attach. To Dave's very practical example, take principle number five. We will capture your information and treat it in an ethical way and strive to preserve and protect your privacy. Okay, so A, I think there's a lot of your customers who would love to know that about you, and it might be a reason to get a meeting with a decision maker you couldn't get before. But B, doesn't that just logically, inevitably require you to have a sales conversation about data privacy and protection and the commercial software tools that allow you to facilitate that in their network? It's a great philosophical platform, but damn, it's a very practical sales proposition too.
Right. And I think most people haven't even had the conversation with their clients about PCI and keeping credit cards private. So this is a jump to say, okay, now we're going to go have this philosophical conversation about, you know, the meaning of privacy and openness and how we balance that, you know, in a $2 million company, right?
Oh, sure. But I mean, look, I don't think any one of us is saying instantly you snap your fingers and you're perfect at this. But, you know, the cliche is important for a reason. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Like, you know, the only way you start on this is by setting your goal and saying, yeah, I'm going to start working on this. And where do you start working on it? You work on it in your own internal organization. I'm still always stunned by managed services providers that don't tell me that 2FA isn't on, or that they right. haven't like done all of the things internally. And I look here and point, look, you've got a responsibility to handle this stuff. You start internally and then you practice on yourself and you take those principles out. I'm not saying, again, I'm not snapping my fingers and you're an expert selling this on, you know, on Monday morning. What I'm saying is this is the target. The people that get there first win.
It begins with the assumption that, look, the internet has always been a place where bad guys sneak in on the fringes and then we have to respond to them. And this is like, you know what, let's raise the conversation a bit and let the good guys figure out what those boundaries look like.
Yeah, exactly.
Back just a little bit.
See, and for years, what I've been saying in the security conversation, as an industry, I think we radically overuse the FUD technique, right? Like, oh, the boogeyman is coming. He's out there and he's coming for your stuff. You're frightened. Please buy my software. I've advocated for a long time, knock it off. Fear is not the right motivator. There's a sober acknowledgement that says, yes, there are challenges out there in the world. But that's why you work with somebody like me, because I'm a security professional and I can give you full confidence to operate in this world. That is the conversation around the entire connected universe now. Yes, there are bad guys. Yes, there's terrible things going on out there, but it's a vital platform for commerce. That's why you work with us. We can protect you. We can make this clean and ethical, and we can make sure that you can brand this stuff with confidence to your own customers. It's a mapping exercise more than anything at this point in time. Boy, it's an exciting business platform.
And we may revisit each piece of this in turn.
Yes, we might.
Any final note, Dave?
Nope, I think we've covered it. Again, right. I would encourage everyone to take a look. Again, right. contractfortheweb.org, that's a great place to start and take a look at this.
And so we'll put a link to that. Also, I just want to say before we go, beginning of December, week after Thanksgiving, what are you guys up to? You just hanging out at home doing nothing for the next
When this drops, when it's available for download, I will be in London for my last trade show of the year I'm on a panel and leading a panel. And then that's it for business travel for me. And I'll be back in DC, but I'm still cranking out episodes of Business of Tech, obviously doing this and doing some additional content as well.
Yeah. And I will be finally arriving at the point of after 55 of 60 consecutive days on the road, I will be home for 14 consecutive days with no airplane rides. So I'm not putting on outside pants for an entire 2 weeks.
I don't think I need to hear about that. So next week, so when this drops, I'll be in Maui and getting ready to go back home. So
Carl wins.
All righty, that's it. Thank you very much. This has been episode 36 of the Killing It,
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.